Welcome to Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest today is engineer Tom Weir. But first, will today's music last? Well, it turns out that older music isn't dying at all like everybody thought. Believe it or not, Nickelback, one of the most hated bands from the recent past, was just added to 140,000 Pandora stations in July. Journey and the Eagles, pretty much the same thing. And the interesting thing is this is on par with major superstars of today like Kanye West and Katy Perry. So will we be listening to dance music 5 years from now, or 10 years from now? Whatever the hits are today in dance music or EDM, you think we'll be listening to them at that point? Do you think the people that really love them are going to be listening to them at that point? The interesting thing here is that publishers are kind of reluctant to sign that stuff because they don't see any longevity in it. They don't see the songs that people are going to want that last for 30 and 40 and 50 and more years. And again, what's happening in streaming is really interesting because although we have Drake and again, you have Kanye and you have Taylor Swift and Lady Gaga and all of today's superstars, but the fact of the matter is, last year, the most listened to music was rock at 29%. Yet you'll never find it anywhere on the radio. But when it comes to streaming, 29% are listening to rock. Just to give you some comparison, the next in line is R&B at 17%, and pop comes in at 15% after that. Following up behind that is country at 11%. So it's really interesting that a lot of today's music isn't translating as much. And I hate to sound like somebody that's old that says, oh, the music back then was better, because we all have our generation gaps. And to me, the generation gap came when I realized that what was hot today was kind of based on music that I heard before. And then when you heard it for the third time, when something is regenerated, regurgitated for the third and fourth time, then you can feel the generation gap kind of opening. There are many artists that I love today that I listen to all the time, I think are great. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at the numbers, the full population of listeners isn't listening to what's on the radio. If you have any questions or comments, send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. Don't forget to check out my 101 Mixing Tricks program and my other online video courses at bobbyosinskicourses.com. You can also check out my music industry and music production blogs. Just go to bobbyosinski.com to find the links, and you can also find excerpts from my books there. Now, here's something interesting. The original console from Abbey Road Studio One from the Beatles era is up for sale. Yes, Red.37, which many think was the epitome of tube electronics, is for sale. It was owned by Lenny Kravitz for the last 25 years, and it was owned by someone in a private studio for 12 years before that. The interesting thing here is that the console has barely survived two natural disasters. One was the console was sold and sent to Lenny Kravitz, and 2 days afterwards, there was a huge fire in Oakland Hills that destroyed the home that the console was in. And then, with Lenny, it turns out there was a huge hurricane that came in that destroyed his warehouse with all his gear in it, which is where the console would have landed, except it happened right before it got there. So this is a console that really has a lot of history in it. It was built in 1958, I believe, and it was in service until just past 1970. And now it can be yours. But there are limitations. First of all, it's only 8-channel. Don't forget, back in those days, they only had 4-track and then a little bit later, 8-track tape machines. So all you got is 8 channels, although they're wonderful Siemens V72 preamps, which, you know, everybody loves and still tries to find today. The other thing about it is there is no direct outs and no phantom power, and it weighs about 800 pounds. Plus, it only runs on British power, meaning you need 240 volts, 50 hertz power. And because it has hundreds of tubes, it runs really hot. So make sure that your air conditioning is pretty beefy for it. Now, this console, Red 37, comes in a package. And there's actually 2 tape machines that come with it. And these are the 2 tape machines that were in the Abbey Road studio at the time. There's a 4-track Studer and there's a 2-track Studer. So you can have this full package for $3 million. So everybody run to their bank, get your cashier's check. The first $3 million takes it. Frankly, I'm sure it sounds great. Everybody'd love to have it. I'd love to have it, but $3 million seems just a little high. My guest today is engineer Tom Weir, who owns Studio City Sound, which is one of the most long-lived studios in L.A. Tom has a wealth of credits, including No Doubt, Willie Nelson, Blondie, Toots and the Maytals, Brian Setzer, The Go-Go's, Eric Clapton, and Keith Richards, and many more. I spoke with Tom live in Studio A of his facility.
I'm really happy to be in studio with your new console, your new toy, which is very cool. It's nothing like having a new Neve.
Yeah, a 1977 8068 Mark II.
What's the difference between a Mark I and a Mark II?
I think it's this mast. See right here?
Yeah.
You can switch everything from mic to line. There's a couple other details I really don't know.
Yeah, okay.
But I do know the big deal is this switch. So instead of switching everything to mic and line, yeah, you just have one switch that switches everybody at the same time.
Okay.
If you're in a hurry.
That's convenient.
If you're miking, switching, and we do a lot of rinsing, so they can just, one switch switches everything to line in, yeah, and they can just drive all the tracks in, just go in and then out, and they can rinse their whole recorded digitally track through the board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Complete, you know, if there's a lot of tracks, we do a couple passes.
You call it rinsing?
Yeah, Neve rinsing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so most people call it summing, but you...
Well, we're not mixing it through. We're just running the tracks through it and then putting them right back on Pro Tools.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
so then
rinsing
is
a good word for it.
They got a rinse job, a Neve 8068 rinse.
Yeah.
And we do coloring. We'll do some coloring and some tinting, which is EQing.
Yeah.
It, basically like a salon. We just have as listed as I just made this up, but that's a good idea. We'll start using that from now on.
Yeah, yeah,
but no,
yeah.
You do a lot of people run their stuff. They might do a little EQing if they want to on some channels. If they want to alter, you know, make some, get some coloring on there. So
yeah, I want to talk more about the studio, and it has a very famous heritage, being Fidelity and owned by Artie Rip prior to you taking it over. But let's talk about you first, and tell me about how you got in the business. Everybody has an interesting story about how they became who they are in this business. So what's yours?
Mine is, it all started in a family band we had. When I was about 11, I started playing, 10 or 11, I started playing drums. And then my dad said, with my brother Larry, he's playing guitar, and we had, my mom's a really good musician, great pianist. And so we had a lot of music around us. So I was around the time of the Beatles. So I took up the drums. And then my dad got me a two-track Sony TC-30 that had sound-on-sound recording. He's like, and he actually had us, I don't know how we were down in Escondido. I don't know how he did it. He goes to Hollywood and he goes, okay, I found a place to record. He sends us up to Gold Star to record with Doc.
Yeah. Wow.
And I think I'm about 12. He terrified us, man. He's like, it was the funniest thing. He's like, drummer, tune your bass drum. And I'm like, what the hell's that mean? My dad's like, tune your bass drum. Tune your bass drum, Michael. I don't know what that means. I said, tune your bass drum. So it was a complete meltdown.
Yeah.
But it worked out good. Then he took us up to sound on, was it Jesse Hodges' studio? So I was a Hollywood sound recorder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he would, how did you find those studios in Hollywood? He goes, I just went to a bar and asked people, where's the best place to record? And the guys in the bar said, go to Gold Star, go to Jesse Hodges. So I had my Sony 2-track, and we had the family band. And then I started learning to record with that. And then, a couple years later, we got this is called the Weirds, this family band. The band kept getting bigger. There's 9 of us in the family. So the band kept expanding depending on how old the kids got. They wanted to join. Yeah, I want to be in the band. So then I got a 4-track, Tascam. What's a 4-track Tascam called? I can't remember.
3340?
Yeah. I had that really bad sound on sound. So I kept going to Montebello every weekend trying to get a fix. And then right when I got to high school, my grandfather, I found an Ampex AG440. In Texas, and my grandfather lent me some money. I think like $4,000. We drove to Texas and picked up this 4-track. I had a 4-track, a Quantum board made by Quantum Audio.
Yeah, I remember those. Sure,
actually, that's the same guy from Inward Connections. Did you know that?
No,
Steve. That's the Steve from Inward Connection. He was the guy at Quantum Audio back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So I had that, an 8-track, and we had our family band. And then I was actually really steady drums. I was like, and I would just go to trade shows. Read, was it EQ magazine?
Yeah.
What was it called? DB magazine, I think
there
was
DB, there was REP, remember?
All those magazines. I'd go to trade shows. That was my school was going to trade shows or reading those magazines and then hanging out at studios anytime I could just kind of get some information. So then we recorded, actually, we were down in San Diego and our first recording actually got on the air. We had And what's crazy is I was buying all these used gear that was the cheapest stuff. So I got like Ampex MX. Oh, there was what's missing there now. was they put in the other room. MX-10s. Because mm-hmm. you can get them for like $100.
Yeah.
And so we had, not knowing those were great. No wonder they're not so good. I had the MX-10s and we had our Quantum board. And so we recorded it, a song for this San Diego radio station, KGB, had a contest. It was called KGB Homegrown.
Yeah.
And the best songs, you send your songs in to the station in San Diego, and the best 10 or 20, I forget, 10 songs got on this album. But footnote, actually, for just through coming to L.A. and playing the L.A. circuits, I ended up meeting, do you remember John Guerin?
Yes, I do.
Playing Joni Mitchell?
Yeah.
So he ended up meeting our band and hang out, and he ended up introducing me to Henry Louis. Do you remember him at A&M?
Of course. Yeah.
So I would bring my 8-tracks that I recorded home up to him at A&M, and he'd mix them for us. But he was giving me tips on like, you should do this, you should do that, So he would mix our stuff for us, and that was, I guess, my recording class was with Henry Louis, not knowing I was taking class with Henry Louis.
Wow.
But then that song got on the Homegrown album. So then I just kept recording, basically just garage recording, and then we moved to L.A. and started doing more stuff, and then my younger brother Michael, he was in the band too, ended up getting on Young and the Restless, and we started doing more recording for him, and we had this, then we moved up to Calabasas, still in the garage, and then he got signed to CBS Canada, and we did one album, we did it at Cherokee, and after getting, let's just say, fleeced at Cherokee, the guy's like, more tape, I'm like, why are you buying all this tape? The label's like, how come you guys bought $20,000 in tape? And we're like so stupid, we didn't know why.
Yeah, all right.
The engineer kept saying, we need more tape, fresh tape. Okay, fine, we didn't know what that. So out of the next time, we dropped like $100,000 on this album. And the next time, I said, Mike, let's just buy a 24-track. I'll just get some of the engineers to help, assist us with this thing. So I ended up getting we get a Amick Angela and a Studer 24-track.
Which is how I met you, because I was working for Amick at the time.
No, is that how you met?
Yes.
Oh, that's what it was, at the trade show. At the AES show, my brother Michael, we talked to you guys.
That's right. And I can remember going to a party at your house, a Christmas party.
So you went to the Calabasas studio then?
Yeah.
Oh, God, sure. It's all coming full circle now.
Yeah.
So that ended up, that studio in the garage, we ended up doing is we recorded Michael's number one hit, Rock On, recorded, mixed it there, did a bunch of stuff, bunch of neat movies. We did this music movie that's still a cult film to this day, Teen Witch, we did all this music for, and a bunch of stuff. And then we moved that studio up to Lancashire like the 90s, that studio out of Calabasas into a place on Lancashire Boulevard. And then my brother kind of got more into directing and decided not to do so much music. I offered just to buy the gear from him. So I set up shop in North Hollywood. Actually, that studio in Calabasas just got moved to North Hollywood. I opened up a studio there. And then I was there there for like 5 years. And then one of my clients, I was working with a guy up there, and he's like, hey, I really like your studio here in North Hollywood, isn't it? It was a Tahunga and Vineland, not a great area for safety.
Fun
people hang out there at night after five. They have screwdrivers and stuff like that.
Yes.
But he's like, hey, man, you're in a terrible area, but if you, you should do, I have a home, he's telling me this story, he's a baseball player, he goes, I have a home studio in Escondido, not a home studio, a rented studio in a building, and if you can find a facility, I'll buy it and rent you the space back. So I was just driving down the street and I saw Fidelity. I'd never been in here before. I call him, I go, hey man, I found a studio for sale. He goes, okay, cool, I'll buy it.
Wow.
So then I've been here 14 years.
Yeah.
Well, he had half it, but he had actually three quarters of it in his studio. About 10 years ago, we decided to get out of recording completely, and then I ended up renting the whole place from him. So
yeah.
14 years later, that's how I ended up at down here.
It's pretty amazing.
Kind of skipped a lot of drama in the meantime.
Yeah. But, I mean, we talked about it before. When this was Fidelity, it's been here since at least the 80s, right?
Oh, I think it was even
70s. Yeah. It was owned by Artie Ripp, who was one of the kind of the founders of the new music business on the business side. We'll leave it at that.
I only spoke to him once, and that was an interesting conversation.
But I recorded here several times. I remember recording in B, and I remember it being set up because there was a lot of voiceovers being done for cartoons and commercials and stuff, and it was set. And I remember walking in and looking and going, this is an odd setup, and it was set up for a crowd of people would be talking. So there was like 7-8 mics, set up. And then recording in here, which was way different. But, again, kind of full circle. Some places where you remember X number of years ago, and you come back around, you go, wow, I remember this. I don't remember that.
Yeah, about a couple years back, somebody from Mix Magazine called me, and they said, hey, do you know who do you know so-and-so, some engineer's name? I go, no. She goes, oh, we're doing a story on the Runaways. You know, they did their album here.
Yeah.
And I didn't know this.
Yeah.
So I call Artie. I'm like, hey, can you tell me the engineer of the Runaways? And he told me, I got a hold of the guy, but I didn't know the Runaways. But even like Chicago was in here one time. They're going, oh, yeah, we used to record all the time. I remember blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And there's always the same story. Like there's some type of substance here. I'm not saying they were, but just.
Yeah. So you've had a lot of famous clients come through here.
I mean. Yeah, we've had like Rod Stewart, Kelly Clarkson. We've had a lot of rap, a lot of hip hop people. And right now we're doing, this week we did, I don't know if it's him, but let's say well-known shows like we're doing this week. We just did Mystery Science Theater. They just restarted the show up again. They've been here all week. And then we do a lot of movie stuff, a lot of soundtrack work, string stuff, all different types of bands. And we even go from, but another thing too, we've branched into all different aspects of it. Like a big part of our work is voiceovers. We kind of branch out in a lot of different areas. Besides the music recording, we have ISDN, we have Source Connect. We do those all the time here. Voiceovers. We do a lot of ADR. We did last year, and we'll do this year, the Criminal Minds ADR for CBS.
Yeah.
So we do a lot of ADR here. And they've even branched out into, you probably noticed, when you helped me with that, getting started with my cameras. 5 years ago, we added cameras to our package. So we can stream live from the studio. We do a lot of mobile stuff, mobile recording, as well as the regular music recording, ADR, voiceover work. And then we do the mobile recording. A lot of times we bring the project back to mix, edit down, or we sometimes stream them live. We stream live movie broadcasts from a premiere from the Chinese Theater. We streamed live there a movie from the Chinese Theater last month. A lot of concerts, clubs, stuff like that.
Well, considering that it's difficult to run a studio these days, is that the secret to diversify and do as much as you
can? If you didn't do that, forget it. I don't know, maybe I'm trying to, but if you only said, I'm only going to do music and bands, then you'd probably have a tough time. But we diversify so much. And then also, if you break out and do these diversified shows, we've been a good example. I've been doing live sound at Sinai Temple. We supervise it for 16 years. We do a recording. We just do a lot of stuff for Sinai Temple. This is a Jewish temple down in Hollywood. One day I was there just to check a setup, and a guy's like, hey, I heard you have a recording studio. He gives me his card, and since then he's done 12 albums here. So if you're kind of just out there, in some medium, it'll come back, Some of our guys don't like to do the, let's say, non-music stuff. It makes us not excited. Some people, not Jeff, of course. Jeff's right over there. But you kind of break out, different things. I think you got to diversify. But between the recording, the VOs, voiceovers, simplest thing is doing, Citibank commercial, the phone prompts.
Yep.
That go from that to Rod, so you got different elements. You can be vastly different projects.
What's the most fun?
The most fun for me anyway is when a client comes in. I have a lot of these clients come in and they have nothing, just a guitar and an idea, and they kind of let us, or they'll hire me to put together a track from zero. That's actually a blast to me, where I can just kind of go into production mode and make something happen from zero. Mm-hmm. And another thing we picked up was mastering. 6 years, it's been 10 years ago. We do a lot of in-house. We have a little in-house label, and I used to send out for mastering. And one time I didn't like the mastering particularly. I'm like, you know what? I think I'll just try my own mastering. So I just rigged up a system in here and put together a process, and then we started doing mastering 10 years ago. So that's actually another big chunk of our business. Between mixing and mastering has become a big chunk, and then we just got approved for
mastering for
somebody
iTunes,
I knew helped me out with that. Master for iTunes program. We actually sent our first master off this week, so,
which is not easy because that's Apple keeps it tight to the vest, so to speak.
Gotta thank that person, so we'll see what happens. We've been doing some. That's another thing I forgot about. I got to have my list here for stuff we do here.
Yeah.
But yeah, but mainly it's diversified, not just strictly music recording, all different types of recording. Like I said, it's been 5 days of just three actors in the different studios here in A, using three channels on the Neve, doing Mystery Science Theater the entire season here. So,
well, let's talk about that, because when you first started here, you were mostly in the box for the most part, right? You try to stay within the box most of the time.
Oh, for mixdown.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So now that you have the Neve, does that change your approach?
Well, actually, I got about after the first year I was here. Interesting, I'll give you. I did this. There's a blues guy did this album for named Mo Rodgers. Ever mm-hmm. him? He's a really good blues guy. Mm-hmm. And his last album for him at my studio in North Hollywood, which was mixed on the A. McAngela mm-hmm. through D88s, right?
Yeah.
And I did an album. I did it here, and I mixed it in the box. And then I came back, and I was like, man, that second album sounds terrible. After comparing the two. Mo, don't listen to this. Is it off? Yeah. This is not as good. So I asked my tech, I'm like, hey, how come this doesn't sound that good? It's supposed to be 24-bit. Pro Tools. He goes, oh, you can't sum all those tracks together and make it sound good. You got it. So I went and I got Inward Connection summing mixers. This goes back 15 years ago. And that's in Studio C, I'll share my setup. I have two Inward Connection summing mixers and a bunch of analog gear. So I have a complete analog mix system in there. Where I've got my own vocal chain, bass chain, background vocal chain, acoustic, you know, different things. I got an AMS reverb from the old AMEC days.
Yeah, yeah.
And we even have the building here came with EMT 140 plates.
Oh, excellent.
And our tech, Dr. Dave Gallo, who also sewed this board together, fixed it. We fixed one. We've got a vacuum tube one there, but they still can't. There's one tube missing. They can't find it somewhere. So yeah. Once they figure out how to get around that. But yeah, so actually I mix all analog and Sieve, all the mix down since probably the last, I don't know, 12 or so years.
Wow.
But yeah, I've got Inward Connection sound mixer. That makes a tremendous difference. It really improves the quality, I think.
Yeah.
Nothing against Pro Tools mix bus, but it's better sound.
Yeah.
And so it's people have the opportunity. My setup is set up in their pre-patch, already locked down. So I'm not going to move it in here. So it's not practical. So,
yeah, sure.
But if someone wants an analog mixer, the Neve, they're more than welcome.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, so you've been in a summing for
A while.
Analog
yeah,
summing
yeah,
for a long
yeah.
time.
It makes a big, it's a big difference.
Now, that being said, if you were doing it that long ago, yes, it made a big difference then. Does it make as big a difference now? Have you tried it?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And you, I always go back, oh, God, I can't do that. I can't go cheap on them.
Yeah, okay.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Especially the width, I think. It's one of the biggest, most interesting things is I don't know how they've, you know, using those summing mixers really, really improves the quality of your tone of your mix.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done a couple where I've been in a hurry. I'm like, okay, no, I'm not going to mention who it was. Just kidding. And I did it through the box. I'm like, oh, man. And then, you know, because I have a specific vocal chain all set up, you know, they go through the Tube Tech, through the Mag EQ and all these de-essers, and I have this analog chain. I'm like, I try to use all just plugins. It's just not the same.
What do you do for recall?
Oh, basically, I don't change any of my analog stuff at all, and I change it with digital. And I have a sends and returns set up on, like, it's a threshold. I just say it was an aux. So I just send more into the limiter if I want more compression. I don't change anything because that would be impossible to quickly go through these mixes. So I basically have a setting that's pretty nice. And then I just modify with digital plugins.
So it's a static analog chain.
Yeah, it's just sitting there. If the only person that's changed the mixes is the maid. And actually, a couple were pretty good ideas. No, two were terrible. I said, where's the snare? Oh, what happened? Oh, she cleaned the
thing. Yeah.
But I do have pictures in case anything happens.
Yeah. Okay, so how many signal chains do you have? You said bass, you said vocals.
I got lead vocal, double lead vocal, background vocals, that's a stereo, bass, kick, snare, left, right drums. Then I have just a couple chains that are just, they just go into the sum mixer with nothing, just direct in and out, like just there's no processing whatsoever. So yeah. Those are mainly for drum machines, you know, program stuff.
Yeah.
I don't like, I mean, sometimes you can say no to anything, but generally some program material, like if it's all drum machine, I would put it through these channels that have no analog, nothing on. They're just basically just going to the sum mixer and that's it.
Yeah.
So there's like 8, 9, 10 chains. And then I made set up a specialty of things. I have, which thanks to Richard, our friend Richard Feldman, we'll talk about Richard later, but someone gave me to try out an AccuVerb. You heard of the AccuVerb spring reverb?
Yes, of course, sure.
I got one here. They gave me one as a demo. It was years ago. And I loved it. And then they sponsored me. Actually, Blue Saraceno got me that one through a sponsorship. That's one of the few things I've been given as a sponsorship.
Yeah.
But that, so I've got that set up to print. I got some specialty stuff in there, like an Eventide there if I want to do some, and I just usually print those things on an audio track. And I got, of course, the EMT to print. I got that wired back there so I can go back and forth. And I've got the AMS is on a return. It always is available for an in and out. And I've got a PCM90 in and out just already pre-wired in there.
That's the most elaborate outboard summing chain I've ever heard.
Really?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, usually people have an outboard summing box, and they'll have an EQ and a compressor, and that's it. You know, they don't change much other than that. That's super elaborate, but it's great. I can see why it would sound terrific.
Yeah, it's great, man. Especially like I say, I use those on a return. So you just with the limiters, the channels that have limiters on them.
Yeah,
you just send your threshold in there. The more you send in, it's more in on the output. You just turn down your level. So you just on your return. So
are you using any plugins?
Oh yeah, a ton of plugins.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I got all mixed up, but that's how I modify the sound.
Yeah.
So I'll just have a basic sound, a tone that's normally works for a lot of things generally, and then I just kind of modify it.
Yeah, got it.
I do have on the right hand side my lead vocal EQ and my double VQ, right there on the. It's an inward connection EQ, and I will change that sometimes manually, just like I'll tweak something here and there. But it's right on the right hand side of me, and I can just quickly.
Yeah.
Go back to what I was to take a picture of it. I have to, but iPhones come really handy for automation. But they used to have that back in the day of the Angela. All those mixes we lost. Oh, what'd you do? I don't know.
That was impossible those days. People would come back and say, "Hey, well, can you boost the hi-hat half a dB?" And you have to pull a whole mix back up. And go, you're never going to hear this 2 weeks from now. You're never going to know. And not only that, it's not going to come back the same way anyway. So
Do you remember Maggie Automation from J.L. Cooper?
Yeah.
Oh, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
That thing that we had a Mac, a little 2C. I was like just barely.
Yeah.
Crashed. Like, no, we lost everything.
Yeah. You have automation on this, right?
No, the Neve has no automation yet. We might get something in there. I guess the only one really to get would be Martin Sound if we get it.
Yeah. On the other hand,
there's been no demand.
Yes, right.
I don't know if it's worth getting. I don't know if we'll put it in. We'll see what happens. But so far, the clients love it. They just record on the channels.
I've always hated console automation, and I loved digital workstation automation because, frankly, I would much rather draw it in. I know what I want it to sound like. I can draw it in faster than I can, with the fader.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I'm not going to say the name of the studio, but I was working on a project at a studio where they had the Neve with the producer who wanted automation. And this wasn't that long ago. It was tragic.
Yeah.
It was so horrible to use. It was like, I couldn't stand it because I am so used to Pro Tools automation. It's so powerful. Because try to draw a pan in.
Yeah.
It ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I was talking to somebody who makes very, very slick hit mixes. And he was telling me that, and it makes perfect sense, the slick sound that you hear today is all on the radio, on pop hits especially, is all due to automation because now you can automate things so precisely. If you want to go in for a phrase, you can go in. And that's what people do. And there's huge amounts of automation. It just makes everything so slick as compared to, what we're used to before, when it was more organic.
Yeah, especially the new Pro Tools with this commit thing they've got.
I
love that because then I can print auxes. Then you can take those things and modify those.
Yeah.
It's something you could only, I wish I could do that. And then now you could do them. The commit to print is amazing.
Yeah.
I think that was the best upgrade that was the best thing that came with Pro Tools 12. Was it Pro Tools 12? I don't know. Whatever it is, it was amazing.
Yeah. So. You're a hardcore Pro Tools guy.
Yeah. We're we have three rooms plus we have a fourth station and a little room, and we're actually going to expand a fourth studio in the back upstairs.
Really?
Yeah, because we do so many. That's another thing I forgot. We do tons. Jeff can attest to that. He's read about how many books have you read?
Lately, 5, 6, in the last couple months.
We do audiobooks.
Oh, yeah.
And so we don't need we don't need B for that. That's got, we don't need all these preamps and compressors. We just need one mic.
Yeah.
One preamp. So we got this room in the back. We're going to probably start doing audiobooks in the back because there's a lot of, that's a big business.
Yeah.
It's a lot of stuff.
And
it's quiet up there.
And Jeff is doing it, and the original author isn't?
Oh, no, the reader comes in.
Oh, reader comes in. Oh, Jeff's recording
engineer. Engineers it. Yeah. He reads the book. I don't think there's even a supervisor, is there? No.
No, usually just narrator and me.
Yeah, and they just go through the book, and then they send it to somebody, and they'll come back with notes like, oh, you said the guy's name wrong, right? Or you pronounced his name, there's notes like that. But yeah, it's a lot, and plus they're lots of time to do these. So we're thinking of putting that room, because we have an Omni for our pro mobile stuff, and we're not using it that much, so we're going to put that upstairs, an Omni we got. Actually, we had that in B, and we decided to go with a bigger system in there. So we put set this room upstairs for another studio just to do audiobook. They can do voiceovers up there, too.
Yeah. Well, see, business has to be good if you're going to do that, if you're putting another room in.
Yeah, so that's... things could be worse.
Yeah.
No.
Now, being in the middle of Hollywood, or middle of the Hollywood, not Hollywood, but we're in Hollywood, you know, so to speak, and that helps. There's a lot of work.
Well, yeah, I think our location is prime because CBS is right over there, and we're close to a lot of different actors. We get a lot of work just because of ISDN work, just because of, we do a lot of NPR, live on NPR, because we got the Telus Zephyr. Lots of interviews. And I think a lot of actors are locally in this area, so I guess they just like look for studio in Studio City. Yeah. I don't know how many there are, but we've got all the equipment, and we've done a lot of this stuff. So
not as many studios as there used to be. I remember when I first moved to California, and it was 1980. And remember the studio cookbook that used to come out?
Yeah, what was that?
It was just a laminated 2-page directory of all the studios. And I remember counting up the 24-track studios, and there was 122, I think, that were commercial. And there was another, you know, small studios, like another 100. There was like a studio on every corner almost. And
no, you're right. You know, there are. Yeah.
You know, that's pretty much gone away.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of people, like, for instance, I got this new customer came in last week. The mother comes in with a 16-year-old daughter, very good singer. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know why we're here is up. We bought Pro Tools, and we tried for 3 months to set it up, and we decided to give you a call. So it's kind of like, okay, if you want to put the time in, but you know, if you want to spend 10, 15 years to learn something, then you might as well save some time. Come here. If you're just an artist, you might as well come here and just get it done quickly, painless. There, go through the
Okay, you've done a lot of different types of sessions and a lot of different people. What's your favorite?
Oh, the favorite session?
Favorite session.
Like I said, I love doing production work.
No. Specifically, was there one in particular you went, man, that was great?
Yeah. Jeff, what was it? I told you that the other day. Who was in here? We did a tracking session for somebody. It was really, really good. It's going to come to me in a minute.
Yeah.
But because of the Neve, you can do things that in your mind you always wanted to do. Like, I wish I could do this. I wish I could bust this thing. Oh, Joe Bonamassa.
Ah, yeah.
He was here about 3 weeks ago, and I had the Neve up and running, and because of he's so good, and his group was so good, and he was such a nice guy, but I was able to get every idea I had in my mind recorded properly.
Yeah.
Like bussing all three mics on the guitar together, which I was never able to do before the Neve. I had to put separate tracks, or I had to do some, you know, thing. But that was the Joe Bonamassa tracking, but I think it was 3 weeks ago. It was fantastic. That was a blast of a session, and it sounded like every possible thing I couldn't have, like, said, you know, somebody recorded, I wish I could have done that often. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just would have forgot that.
Yeah.
But that was a blast. So, yeah, I'd say the Joe Bonamassa about 3 weeks ago was the best one I've done here since I've been here. So that was, and if it wasn't for the Neve, I couldn't have done it. We had 32 great Class A preamps, but never in such an easy workflow situation, so easy and fast now, because our patch bay is normal now. Before we had to patch everything in separately, took like a half hour to patch in 30 tracks. Now you just plug them in and they just go.
Something to be said for a real console, huh?
Yeah, I mean, going back to 77.
Yeah.
Come full circle.
Okay, what was the worst? You don't have to name names.
Oh, man. Okay. The worst? Well, let's just say it wasn't really a bad session, that the person was just ornery. Yeah, there was a famous guy in here. I'm not naming any names, but man, don't want to be in a room with the guy. No, he was just berating everyone, including myself. He was just some famous guy. I'm not going to say who it was.
Yeah, okay. That's no fun, is it?
Put it this way. It was so bad that I'd made room for this guy, and I was booked. And they're, well, you got to come and record this guy's drums. He's really famous, blah, 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 blah. And he was so irritating. I had an out, and I said, I only had 2 hours. I said, I gotta leave. I'm gonna, and I told the guys, get someone else to come in. I have to jump in, and I can't stay any longer. I was for the first time here, I was watching the clock, and like, how much longer are you being?
Oh, yeah.
So, as he continued to break, not just me, everybody, it was like, guys, I mean, he went to the office to hit on my niece. It was like crazy. It was like, this really old man just asked me to go to Hawaii with him, and she ran out the building. So, it was one of those kind of things, right?
Yeah.
So, said, ask so-and-so if he'd come in and sub for me. And he writes back, absolutely not. That guy's a complete. I will never come in here. So I finally got a guy. He's like, oh, cool. I'd like to say. So finally, they said to the guy, hey, you tell him I have to leave. What do you mean you're leaving? You said you only had 2 hours. What are you talking about? I have a sub, and my sub came in and did it, but then continued to get berated for the next 4 hours. But it was just a lot of shrapnel all over the place, and I was like, man, how does that work every day? It's like that. Whoa, that was weird. Then you get one of those every 10 years. It was fine.
Yeah.
But so many great ones, it overshadows.
Well, it always seemed to me is like the people that really had the most going on were the nicest people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it was people that were actually, you know, on their way up or on their way down that were kind of more ornery than the
yeah,
people that are
yeah,
kind of
yeah.
on
There's
the
top. Some ornery, I've yeah. had some ornery, I call them, I shouldn't say that. I call them ornery, like, wedding band musicians. They're like, what the hell? No, but there's so many great people. Like, you know, if you had, like, really big people, like Rod's here, like, nicest guy you could work for. Worked for almost 2 years here. You know, even, like, when I'd, like, make mistakes, don't worry about it. That's okay. I think I just messed something up. Don't worry. It's fine. So, no, there's so many great people we've had in here. It's amazing.
So. But again, somebody like that who's been in the business for so long and seen so much, you know, it's hard to phase them at this point.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. There's some nice people. And I just did an album for I just did an album. This is a really fun project for the Carmelite Sisters, these nuns from Alhambra.
Yeah.
This is their 10th album. It sounds amazing. And the crazy thing was I got all these A players on their album.
Yeah.
And most of them would not take money. They're like, no charge. I'm doing some free.
That's great.
So that was a good one. I just finished that. Actually, I'll play it for you.
Yeah. Very cool.
So we've had some great stuff in here. So
Yeah.
It's never a dull moment, right, Jeff?
Never. All right. Last question.
Yes, sir.
What is the best piece of business advice, music business advice, that someone imparted to you along the way, or maybe you learned yourself just through experience?
If you're going to get in the music business, especially in the recording business, I would definitely learn the music. Like I always tell guys when they come in here, I go, do you know a piano, drum? No. Learn the piano, please. It's going to really help you no matter what you do, an instrument, some kind of musical knowledge rather than just learning how to push some buttons and open some software.
I'm shocked people come in and they're not musicians. Does that happens, really?
I'm saying guys who work here? Yeah. They'll go to recording school or whatever, and they never really learn an instrument. They'll just learn only.
Yeah.
Because you've got to be able to talk to your clients. And especially now with tuning and stuff and note manipulation, you've got to learn. You've got to know music. You got to have an ear.
I mean, even for video, for editing, I always felt that the best editors were musicians because they could feel the pulse of everything.
Oh, they know the beats are?
But, you know, what... Somebody that isn't a musician is trying to edit picture, for instance. It's very...
Oh, yeah.
It's almost by the numbers, you know.
Yeah, even now when I get a young singer that comes in, I'm like, can you play with a metronome? No. Okay, gotta get it. Right, get your phone and get a metronome app right now.
Yeah, right. Well, so is that the biggest piece of advice you'd have for somebody?
It's different. If they're like a guy that wants to... engineer work in the I would definitely learn music if you're going to want to pursue engineering in music field.
Yeah,
that would definitely be helpful.
Okay, somebody that knows that already.
Be as nice as you can, everybody. Yeah. That can't hurt.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Because no one's going to call you back. Or very limited.
It's a almost a universal truth in the business. The people that are fun to be around always work, and the people aren't, they don't.
Sooner or later, I just have a list of people like, now that guy, he may play good, but let's just not get in trouble. Yeah. Just I'd rather use somebody else.
I hear you. Definitely. Thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
This is great.
Thank you.
Yeah, man.
All right. Thanks a lot.
To find out more about Tom and Studio City Sound, go to studiocitysound.com. It's all one word, Studio City Sound. Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyoinnercircle.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, or you can find it on iTunes, Stitcher, Mixcloud, and Google Play. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.